Hello, and welcome to episode 64 of the Story Hack Podcast. The Story Hack Podcast features action, adventure, and mystery stories, mostly from the public domain. Story Hack is also a print magazine which publishes new action and adventure stories in a wide variety of genres. Visit storyhack.com today for more information. Today we will hear The Chickasha Bone Crusher by Harry Charles Whitwer.
The Chickasha Bone Crusher. Lately you'll find a lot of women at prize fights. Some of them covers their white faces with their hands and devotes themselves to wishing it was over, and some of them stamps their feet on the floor as excited as the hoarsely bellerin' stevedore on one side of them, and the wheezing corporation lawyer on the other, and hollers shrilly, "Knock him out! Knock him out!" I ain't got the slightest intention of getting mixed up in no argument as to whether it's proper or no for a member of the adjoining sex to be a part of the yowlin' cussin' mob which watches one guy endeavor to knock another one stiff for pennies. In the first place, anything any Jane does is okay with me. In the second place, I know nothing whatsoever about the girls except I am practically certain that if it wasn't for them we'd all be throwing coconuts at each other in the tops of the trees today. But to get back to the original subject, the bloodiest prize fight I ever seen since I've been piloting leather pushers was deliberately staged by a woman because she hated the game. Sounds odd, hey? Well, listen. Arthur Kid Roberts, with me at the wheel, had win the world's heavyweight title. We tell the ambitious young men which is clamorin' for first punch at the new monarch of the maulers that we have declared armistice for a year, at the smallest as far as vulgar fisticuffs is concerned. We have a movie agreement which would make the charmin' Mrs. Fairbanks raise her equally charmin' eyebrows and a circus contract running into as beautiful figures as Ziegfeld ever seen. The circus portfolio comes first and calls for the appearance of the kid twice a day during a tour of the country. He's down on the menu to punch the bag, pull the weights, skip rope, shadow box, and step a couple of frames with his sparring partners. The big wow at the finish is an offer to take on any man, woman, or child in the audience for 3 rounds. At the time this round opens, Dolores had gone to Washington with her father, which had been suddenly called there as the Senate had decided to begin playing practical jokes on the president again. Me and Kid Roberts with our kingly retinue was flitting through the train stops on signal-only berths, knocking the natives cold with our 40-minute demonstration that self-defense is not only a plea, but our... It was at a one-night stand in Chickasha, Oklahoma, that one joke Kenneth or villain of this yarn, whichever you like first, took a running jump and dove into the spotlight. Following the amazingly agile acrobats and extraordinarily educated elephants, the cheaper help was chased out of the arena, shivin' Kid Roberts the place to himself. In the middle one of the 3 big circles a regulation ring was swiftly thrown together before the eager eyes of the odd customers, the tent lights was all dimmed, and a blind in calcium was thrown on said ring. Then a special announcer began a long debate with himself, which was mostly blar blar, and wound up with a... And now, laddies and gentlemen, I have the great pleasure of introducing to you one and all the most scientific, polished, gamest and hardest-hitting exponent of the manly art of self-defense that the American prize ring had ever produced. The cheering usually begin about here, the world's champion heavyweight boxer, Kid Roberts. Whilst the band played Dixie on account of the kid being a born New Yorker, and the mob went hysterical by a large majority, Roberts, caparisoned in a dazzling dress suit, circled the arena twice, standing up in the back of an auto lift in his hat and bowing this way and that. Following an exhibition of training stunts which was eat up by the natives, the kid went 2 snappy rounds apiece with his sparring partners, a good dinge heavy correctly called Dynamite Jackson and Knockout Burns, a tough old warhorse. Then whilst the mob, which has just seen enough to set him delirious, is howling their heads off, the announcer holds up both hands for silence, grabs up his megaphone, and tells the world that Kid Roberts will box 3 rounds with anybody in the tent outside of the elephants, using 10-ounce gloves, which is the same as pillows, to 4-ounce mitts for his daring opponent. In his hand the announcer waves a little pink slip of paper. "Ladies and gentlemen," he says, It has been the custom in the past, when champions towered the country tacking on all corners, to offer a reward of some sum like $100 to any man which could stand before the title holder for 3 or 4 rounds. The results of this was that a lot of young and inexperienced boys got their heads beat off and took cruel and unusual punishment trying to stay on their feet so's in the order to get that jack. I want to say to you one and all, this evening, folks, that Kid Roberts is not that kind of a champion. He's beneath tacking the advantage of his superior strength and skill. But on the behalf of the management, I hereby show you a certified check for $5,000, which will be presented to any man in this audience which can knock Kid Roberts off his feet inside of 3 rounds. This always galled the mob. Naturally, we had a couple of huskies planted in the attendance which volunteered when the young man was coy about tacking a chance of stopping the kids right with their chin. But now and then that $5,000 offer caused some rustic which would have dove off Washington's monument into a bucket of water for a 5 foot to come to the fore. Such gentle readers was the case that night in Chickasha. The announcer had hardly finished when there's a slight commotion in one of the back rows and a growing rumble of cheers from the crowd. Up the aisle comes a human mountain which could probably have gazed over the top of Eiffel's Tower without standing on his toes, and who was likewise as delicate and sickly-looking as the Rock of Gibraltar. Under a mop of black hair, cut high and round in the rear, his weather-beaten, sharply-cut features wasn't bad-looking in a hick way. I guess his age is 35, too old by about 15 years to take up box fighting as a trade. Boxing, boys and girls, is strictly a young man's game. Wolf! Grins Dynamite Jackson to the kid. Sure is a tough baby coming to visit us, boss. Looks like to me you're gonna be compelled to smack a boy down. It looked like to me, too, when this guy puts one mighty paw on the top rope, vaults into the ring with a thump that sent up clouds of dust from the canvas and begins removing his coat and collar. The mob is with him to a man, and he's blushing furiously, but gay as he begins rolling up his sleeves without giving the smilin' kid as much as a look. Thinly he bends down and ties up a loose shoelace, takes a couple of reefs in his belt, and faces us. Let's go! He snarls at the kid and puts up his hands. Whilst the crowd is still shrieking, I grab this dumbbell's arm with both hands and explain to him that whilst his spirit was O.K., his costume was a trifle out of order for a boxing bout, and that if he'd step into the dressing room with the handlers, everything would be J. At this the man mountain balks. He claims that nothing in the wide, wide world will induce him to remove his citizen's clothes and reveal his manly form to the multitude in a brief pair of trunks, as he is on hand to fight not to go swimming. He's also got a kick to register with a regard to wearing gloves on the grounds that nobody could hurt each other with their hands all cushioned up, and he sneeringly inquires if the kid is afraid of him. This cuckoo was a bit rough, hey? Well, we finally talked him into stripping to ring togs after I have convinced him that Kid Roberts has showed no signs of trying to sneak out of town since looking him over, and that he'd be pleasantly surprised in a few minutes at the damage it was possible to do with a pair of boxing gloves if it was properly applied. The 15 minutes or so which this bimbo devoted to changing his costume was nerve-wracking on the crowd, and by the time he stepped into the ring again there was all ready to bite nails. A cheer which swayed the tent poles greeted him when he throwed off the overcoat he had draped over his walking beam shoulders and walked over to the corner selected for him. He viewed the 2 circus attendants, which was deputized to handle him with open suspicion, and absolutely refused to sit down on the stool whilst waiting for the bell. Oh, this baby was raring to go. What's your name, fella? Whispered the announcer hoarsely, standing beside him. And whereabouts are you from? Joe Kenny, says the hick in a voice as deep as the center of the Atlantic. My place is near Chickasha, and that don't mean nothing, snorts the announcer, straightening up and fastening the crowd. Ladies and gentlemen, he roars, pointing to the astonished Joseph. We have with us tonight Oklahoma's favorite son and one of this fair state's leading exponents of the manly art, which has artificated some of the best men in his class. He will now box Kid Roberts 3 rounds and attempt to win the $5,000 prize by knocking the world's heavyweight champion off of his feet. Allow me to present to you one and all Hurricane Kenny, the Chickasha Bone Crusher. The mob howls with joy, and Joe Kenny's eyes stuck out of his head till you could have knocked him off with a cane when he hears the title which the announcer had bestowed on him, the first time, as I found out later, he had ever stepped into a ring. Whilst our referee is telling the Chikasha bone crusher that kicking bitten, jiu-jitsu, or pulling a knife will disqualify him, a scattering beller of weights, comes up from the customers, and the announcer again whispers to Joseph, then leans over the ropes. The weights. He hollers. The weights is Kid Roberts, 197.5, Hurricane Kenny, 226.
Wow!
Shrieks the crowd.
Knock him out, Kenny, we're with ya!
Then the bell rung. Kenny had evidently made up his mind that he would qualify immediately for the Hurricane label, which had just been gave him, for he charged across the ring at the Kid with a snarl like a famished panther. For a man of his bulk, he was really surprisingly light on his feet, but the first wild haymaker he let go was the tip-off that Joe had never before pushed his knuckles through a boxing glove. The Kid lazily blocked the punch and countered with a straight left to the mouth that made Kenny say, "How do you do?" and brung joyful yelps from the crowd. The Chikasha bone crusher then uncocked a wicked right swing to the body, which, although the Kid took it on his elbow, drove him against the ropes and the crowd crazy. Kenny followed the Kid up, pinning him against a ring post with his huge body, and suddenly slidden one arm around the champ's neck, he began wailing away at the stomach with the other. The big tent fairly quivered with the uproar now, half the mob booing Kenny and yelling for the referee to break him, and the other half screaming for the bone crusher to knock the Kid stiff. The panting, excited, and red-faced referee, both hands grabbing the whitened tongue that passed his Kenny's arm, was actually swinging off the floor on it, trying to unhook it from around the Kid's neck. He might as well have tried to push over the Rocky Mountain with one hand. Roberts curled up and kept his head, macking most of Kenny's rib crackers glance off his arms, but some of them was getting through, and when they did, having 226 pounds of bone and muscle behind him, well, they wasn't doing the Kid any good. He kept chopping at Kenny's head and face with his right, but this baby seemed to have a iron jaw, and besides, they was too close together for the Kid to put any snap in his blows. Roberts looked at me over the human bear's shoulder and shook his head, kinder puzzled.
"Down below, Kid!"
I hollers. "Down below, work on his heart." Still cool, the champ drops his head till it rests on Kenny's heaven chest. He sets himself for half a second and then both arms begin pumping like pistons into the hurricane's body. Left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right. A minute of this and Kenny's grunts with each blow could be plainly heard by guys in the last row. The arm comes away from the Kid's neck and I see the back muscles quivering under the rolling skin. Quick hair startled like, and the Kid shifts his attack, and a vicious right uppercut sent the bone crusher back on his heels, powing at the breeze for support. Roberts, however, refused to follow up his advantage and put him away, but contented himself with left-handing his man all over the ring, never letting the bewildered Kenny set for a solid punch. The bell only seemed to irritate the Hurricane further, and he took two free swings at the Kid after the latter dropped his hands and started for his corner, for which the mob gave him the raz. When the indignant referee explained to him that the gong meant cease fearing, Kenny grinned sheepishly, walked over to the Kid and shook his hand, mumbling something about not knowing the rules. The Kid presents him with a pleasant smile and a pat on the back, and as Joseph returns to his corner the crowd give him a hand which would have tickled Chaplin. During the rest I told the Kid that as this Kenny person was about the foulest fighter I ever seen work, he had better crack him and be done with it. Robert shakes his head and says he'll merely keep him off and let it go at that. "This fellow isn't deliberately foul," says the Kid. "He's simply ignorant of the rules, that's all." I don't believe he ever fought in a ring before in his life until this minute. Besides, he's too tough and too game to be stopped with a punch. I'd have to wear him down with punishment first, and I'm not going to cut him up.
Let us alone, we're having a lot of fun.
Kenny didn't land two solid wallops during the entire second round, though he must have thrown 8 million gloves in the general direction of the Kid's jaw. Long before the bell he was so blown and tired from his own exertions that he lumbered around after the dancing, smelling Kid like a drunken elephant. Barbara simply give the hurricane and the crowd a boxing lesson, avoiding Kenny's terrific clouts by shifting his body aside a fraction of an inch or macking the bone crushers while men effort slide harmlessly around his neck by rolling his head this way and that, whilst the customers squealed with glee. The gong was a welcome sound to Monsieur Kenny, which flopped heavily on his stool, blowing like a school of whales. Round three was a duplicate of the other two, with the slight exception that it only went a minute and a half. Kenny was slow to leave his corner, and so tired from chasing the elusive kid about the ring that he could hardly raise his hairy arms. His stomach was pumping in and out like a bellows. The mob, quick to sense his condition, implored the kid to knock him for a goal, but Roberts had no such idea. He straightened the hurricane up with a couple of stiff jabs to the face, and Kenny's knee sagged as he fell over against the ropes, mouth open gasping, and primed to be bounced. The kid stepped away from him to make him lead, and as Kenny swung wildly with both hands to the head, the champ slid inside the blows and planted a short right hook to the jaw. I know Roberts pulled the punch. There was hardly enough kick in it to rock a man, and a few minutes earlier Kenny would have brushed it off like a fly. But now it was all different. Out of condition and exhausted by his own wild swinging, the bone crusher toppled to his knees with a crash that shook the ring. He paid no attention to the referee's count, probably didn't know what it was all about, but turning his head around he snarled something at the cuckoo mob, which was on its feet screaming at him. Slowly and painfully, Kenny pulled himself upright at the count of six, a thin, crimson stream trickling from one corner of his mouth, where the kid had probably loosened a tooth. He spread his trembling legs wide apart to brace himself upright, and faced the kid with dangling, useless arms, his glaring eyes the life's portion of his tired body. Set in his jaw, Kenny stares grimly into the kid's troubled features. "Go ahead, old-timer. Pants this 29-carat gamester, they ain't nothing to hinder you now." With a delirious mob bellerin' for murder, show me the champion or preliminary burn, which wouldn't have measured this guy and knocked him stiff. But Kid Roberts drew back and looked sharply at the beaten hurricane for an instant, and then, as Kenny suddenly swayed on his feet, the kid stepped forward and caught him in his arms, easing him gently to the floor. "Next!" bawls the announcer. A mob is already jostling out of the exits. We had to lay over in this bird till 2 o'clock the next afternoon, and during breakfast in the kid's private car, we get to talking about Monsieur Hurricane Kenny, the Chickasha Bone Crusher. I had personally gave that baby a lot of thought, for at the time I was already keeping an eye out for a possible successor to Roberts, which couldn't be moved an inch from his determination to quit the ring after a couple of fights as champion, win, lose, or draw. The fact that the kid had disposed of Kenny with the greatest of ease the night before didn't bother me at all. Kid Roberts himself was a terrible bust in his first start. Kenny had showed he possessed the first and most important requirement of a fighter, viz. And to wit, courage. Also, I had the kid's word for it that he could hit. As he stood now, he didn't know the difference between a left hook and the referee, but he could be taught that, and likewise to hit from his bulging shoulders instead of from his hips. Although he looked 10 years older, he'd give his age as 24, another big help. Standing a good 3 inches over 6 foot, he scaled 226, of which perhaps 15 pounds was flabby and could be worked off, leaving him a steel sinew, giant fighting machine with heart enough to make him a serious problem in a 24-foot ring for any man. As a matter of fact, I figured that about 3 months readying up and working out with my champ would make Kenny ripe to wade through the third-rate heavies as sensationally as the kid did. I put it up to Roberts, and he was enthusiastic. "Bring him along, by all means," he nods. "He's a good, game fellow and may develop into a first-class heavyweight. At all events, he'll make a splendid sparring partner, for, in spite of his greenness, he's tough and dangerous enough to keep me on my toes for a few minutes at least. I admire the way he stood up to me, and I'll take a great deal of interest in teaching him what I can." He takes out his wallet and removes a 100-case note. "Here," he adds, "that big fellow's poor showing against a smaller man last night must have been rather humiliating. I know how miserable I felt the first time. Give him this, it'll cheer him up a bit. From the desperate way he tried to put me out, the poor devil probably needs it, unless I'm very much mistaken." He was very much mistaken. I ambled into a general store where they sold everything from potatoes to pianos, and learned that Joseph Kenny could be found on a cattle mine about 2 miles out of the metropolis. The merchant prince which owns the store heartily recommends his son as a scout, and a long, lean, lank dumbbell garb like W.M.S. Hart, minus the artillery, quits killing flies with a lash of a quirt and nods for me to follow him out. I was just going to inform him that ridden horses was one of the 2 or 3 things I ain't fluent at, when he leads me over to an ancient, dilapidated flivver and motions me to enter therein. "Wait a minute," I says. "How much is it going to set me back for this joy ride?"
$20,
answers my charming guide, automatically disqualifying himself as a movie cowboy by using 2 hands to roll a cigarette. "I'll give you 5, I says pleasantly.
"Done," he says. "Get in and haul fast."
Joe Kenny, need the Chickasha Bone Crusher, was discovered aboard a horse with some guys afoot which was mending rails in a fence. He returned my greeting intact. A little mouse under his right eye and a slightly puffed lip was the only visible signs of strife on the Man Mountain's countenance. Realizing how $100 must appeal to a $40-a-month cowpuncher, I draw forth a bill and handed it to him. "A little present from Kid Roberts," I explains with a bewitching smile. "Likewise, I have come to offer you a chance to make as much in a week punching ears as you'd make in a month punching steers. Us here to see." The world's largest cowboy looks the 100-case note over carefully, folds it up, and slips it in his pocket.
"Much obliged," he says. "This here's the Crawlin' S Ranch. I own it, so I reckon I'm the boss."
Anybody which has nothing else to do can picture my astonishment.
"Ahee," I says, when I recovered.
Of course, bein' the wealthy owner of a steak farm instead of a lowly cowboy, the Ma 100 smackers I just give you was unnecessary, and
that's all right, but's in the bone crusher. Every little bit helps. Come up to the house, and I'll hear your story.
"I hardly think it's worthwhile now," I says. "I'm afraid my stuff wouldn't hit you at all, you bein' a rich cattle king and the like. I come here with the idea of getting you interested in the box fightin' industry, but..."
"Well, partner," interrupts Kenny, his eyes gleaming, "you couldn't have throwed in with a more interested man. As a matter of cold fact, you're talking to the common heavyweight champion of the world."
This was all different, and I followed him up to the house without no more further ado. A sweet-faced, brown-eyed, fairly good-looking young woman is sitting on the piazza wielding a mean darning needle and exorcising women's inalienable right to hum to themselves whilst working. At the foot of her rocking chair rumped, as I rightly guessed, 3 little Chickasha Bone Crushers. The girl's face lit up like a cathedral when she seen Kenny, and I discovered I had been mistaken when I thought her fairly good-looking. She was beautiful.
"This love thing is wonderful stuff, and I bet there'll be a crash heard round the world when I fall into it."
Mention of the fact that I was manager of a prize fighter killed off the welcome and smile on the face of Kenny's wife, but the introductions was accomplished without violence, and we went on inside the house. The Chickasha Bone Crusher dragged out a box of cigars, a wink, and a bottle of Prohibition ended up in that order. Then he sits down and stretches himself.
"Come a shootin',"
he says. I asked him if he was in the habit of drinking and smoking as training exercises, and frowning, he says he was in the habit of doing what he pleased, so I made the greatest haste to remark that whilst it was none of my business, he was ruining his wind with the smokes and his nerves with a hooch, and that most successful scrappers laid off both. With a grin, Kenny reaches lazily over and picks up unusually thick poker from the fireplace. Placing his hands about a foot apart on it, he bent it double like I'd fold a sheet of paper. Then he bent it back again and tossed it clattering on the floor. I'd never seen the stunt done before with such little effort. There was no veins standing out like whipcords, as the saying is, on Kenny's 20-inch neck, nor did beads of perspiration drop off his brow. He done the thing as carelessly as he'd break a matchstick. The bone crusher didn't have to do that to show me his muscle. A look at him and you'd believe he'd moved Grant's tomb 6 inches with his shoulders. But strength alone, boys and girls, is not enough to become a title holder in Fistiana. For the example, every good wrestler has had ambitions to become a boxing champ at one time or another in his career, and a great many of them have laced on a pair of gloves and stepped into a ring only to be made look foolish by some third-rate pug. Even Frank Gotch, the daddy of them all, once had this experience. Professional strongmen, weightlifters, and the like are flops as a rule when they turn to the ring. Their sinews haven't been developed for show or pushing and hauling purposes. They're so slow and muscle-bound that the slighter boxer has no trouble at all stepping around them and passing them pretty. But to get back to the bone crusher. Inside of a half hour, I have found out that reading about what heavyweight champions that for a few minutes work had murdered Joe Kenny's interest in the art of raising cows. Likewise, Joseph made no secret of the fact that he figured himself a topside slugger, able to hold his own with the best of them right now. "Well, Joe," I says enthusiastically, when he got finished, "I'm for you and so's Kid Roberts. Get your hat on and we'll go down to a notary's public if there's one in this burg. I'll sign you up for 3 years and you can start working out with the kid right away. With me as your manager and the champ as your teacher," we say, "inside of a year. Drawing your loop, old-timer." Butts in Joe, risen and handing me my hat. "I don't need no manager, and I ain't aiming to take no job as a helper. I don't want to take advantage of your champion by joining up with his outfit, because I can lick the tar out of him right now. While you're here, I need you in your fair warning the next time I run across your man. I'm coming a-slugging with both hands. A dumbbell is a awful thing, hey?" The kid and me split a laugh between us when I told him how the Chickasha Bone Crusher had received my generous offer. Then we forgot all about Monsieur Kenny. The next stop was Tycho P., another duck-in and duck-out hamlet, and when the kid finishes his act and calls for volunteers, Batlin Thomas, one of the plants we carried, starts up the aisle, as there is no response from the brave men and true in the audience. Halfway to the ring, the battler is pushed to one side by a large, tall person wearing a wide-brimmed black Stetson. Laying one hand on the top rope, a stranger leaps into the ring, waves his hand airily to the shouting crowd, and presents me and the kid with a sneering, full-toothed grin. "Beats all how us boys do cross trails," says Hurricane Kenny, the Chickasha Bone Crusher, throwing his coat over one of the posts. "I'd admire to draw down them $5,000. Whereabouts is them gauntlets?" 20 minutes later, the kid is shacking hands with a somewhat battered and slightly bleeding human shock absorber entitled Hurricane Kenny. One of Kenny's glims is a study in purple, and a cut on his left cheekbone shows the dashing rancher to be possessed of red blood anyways. Kid Roberts is sporting several crimson blotches on his gleaming white body where some of the hurricane's wild haymakers has landed, but outside of that is unharmed. "Better luck next time, old man," smiles the kid as we're leaving the ring. "I'll knock you out the next time," growls the jovial Kenny. We had a 150-mile jump from the slab, and a wicked rainstorm when we got there kept most of the natives away. "But it didn't keep Joe Kenny away." Joseph ambled up the aisle and took a front seat whilst the kid was given an exhibition of bag punching. Seeing him, the kid laughed and then nodded pleasantly. And Joe replied with a snarl that caused the hicks on both sides of him to edge from him nervously. A short time afterward, Joe gave the customers a treat by crashing through the ropes to the floor twice in his desperate efforts to knock Kid Roberts for a row of ash cans. About the only time Kenny laid a glove on the kid was when they shook hands at the end of the thing. Well, for the next half dozen times, the Chickasha Bone Crusher was a regular feature of the show, wherever they permitted boxing. Kid Roberts, which seemed to be getting a lot of giggles out of Kenny, refused to knock him stiff and be done with it, although he always had to slow up this big ham early with a smash over the heart so as no accidents would happen. Finally, we get to New Orleans, where we're due to linger a week. Kenny fails to appear on the opening night, and I lay the kid 8-5 that the Bone Crusher has decided to call it a day. He showed up on the last night, and the big stiff thereby costs me 800 fish. But before Kenny lumbered into the ring, that eve me and the kid has a visitor in the shape of no less than the Bone Crusher's charming young wife. She has came all the ways from dear old Chickasha known to her bitter half, and if it wasn't for the cute trick she had of scrunching up her little nose, I doubt if I would have knew her. There was half moons under the honest brown eyes, and she's a bit pale and drawn. Sniffing scornfully at the bespangled, short-skirted ladies of the trapeze and the etc., she made her way over to where we were standing on the lot. She'd seen me, of course, before,
but not the kid, and she's standing right in front of him when she asks where she can find the champion. Roberts has his hat off and is bowing at her before I can stall her and misses. Hurricane Kenny's eyes register surprise as they sweep the smelling kid from stem to stern. No doubt she expected to see some cauliflower-reared, red-faced, snaggle-toothed, hairy caveman instead of this handsome young blonde which looked almost slight alongside of her gigantic helpmate. Although I kept both ears wide open and both eyes glued on hers whilst she talked, I could find nothing suspicious about her story told in a halting, moist voice which had the sympathetic kid for her and me wavering before she had said six words. It seemed that Joe Kenny had now gone cuckoo on the subject of box fighting, and his idea that he would be the next world's heavyweight champion had been greatly strengthened by the fact that the kid hadn't flattened him to date. So he has turned his ranch over to a dumbbell brother to run and, according to Mrs. Kenny, said brother is running it right into the ground. At this point Mrs. Kenny resorts to the use of props. She extracts a gram of lace from her pocketbook, and with an occasional touch of it to the eyes, she says she and the bone crusher was happy and everything was jake till the circus and the kid come to town. She don't accuse the kid in words of having dumb things up, but she does it with her eyes, whilst she's half-sobbing that she don't want her husband to be no pugilist, and that him chassin' all over the country after the circus is bustin' up her home. She claims if the kid don't send the wanderin' bone crusher back to Chickasha, Kenny won't have no wife, ranch, or Jack left. It might sound funny to you, Mr. Kid, she winds up with a quiverin' of lip that will sure fire on Roberts. But it's a tragedy to me. Well, the kid spent the best part of 15 minutes telling her to go home and cheer up, leaving everything else to us. He says if Hurricane Kenny shows up in this bird, he will have a long talk with him and do all he can to lay him off the art of box fighting. He also adds that Kenny is the luckiest guy since Columbus to have discovered a wife like she, which brings a healthy blush and a pleasant smile to the rapidly brightening face of Mrs. K. Then I crammed into her hands a lot of balloons to be blowed up and other souvenirs of the circus for the kids, and we took her to the station in the kids' bus, so's the bone crusher wouldn't run across her, was he in our midst. These frequent settos with the good-natured world's champion wasn't makin' Kenny no worse, and he has now advanced to the point where he's hitting straight from the shoulder, and the kid is extended to keep him off without dropping him this time. After the bout we go into the dressing room off the ring to interview Kenny as advertised to his wife. As a success, the interview was a failure. Kid Roberts, with a brotherly air, advises the Chickasha bone crusher to quit following us hithers and you and go back to his charming consort. He tells Kenny what a tough game boxing is, how he personally dislikes it himself, and that he's going to leave the ring flat on its back in another year. Winding up, the kid pats the bone crusher on the back and remarks that with his wonderful family and prosperous ranch, Kenny's a sultan compared to the average prize fighter. The Chickasha bone crusher, pulling on his citizen's clothes, has heard Kid Roberts through without a word, but with a sneer on his face, which would have caused anybody else in the world outside of the kid to knock him dead as he sat on a stool. Now he looks up from tying his shoes and one swollen lip curls to the tip of his beak. Show is noble of ya to look after me, he snarls, but ya can't buck jug me thatter way. I aims to stay on your back till I'm champion, which then I'll be as sure as my name's Joe Kenny. Reckon I'm getting too rough for ya, hey? Come mighty near roughing ya there for a minute tonight, didn't I? Yea, and I would have, only they rung the bell when they seen ya was hurt. Good thing I had them pillows on my hands or I'd have sure mussed up that baby face of yon, partner. I'd admire to take you on in a finish fight with bare knuckles without no bells and without the cotton padding on my hands. He give a nasty laugh. But I don't reckon you hanker for no manhandling. Takes a fighter for that, not a boxer, hey? You big? I begins, but the hard glitter only stayed a second in the kid's eyes. He pulled me to the door. Kenny, he laughs shortly, you're an insulting and aggravating fool. For your information, let me say that I could have knocked you out at any time you were in the ring with me. I don't want deliberately to hurt you, and evidently nothing but a thorough beating will reach your asinine egotism. Well, I'm human. Can I in the future keep away from me? We didn't wait for the bone crusher's answer. From New Orleans to Washington, Kenny followed the circus, but he had no more bouts with the kid. Instead, in every town he publicly challenged my title holder to a Finnish fight for the world's championship, which got us Boku publicity gratis in the sticks. In most of the big burgs, the wisecracking newspaper guys had the bone crusher pegged as a plant and wouldn't give him a tumble. In Washington, however, one of the sport writers fell for him, and after an interview, printed under Kenny's photo, a two-column blur of romantical hooch about him being a dashing cowboy from the ferocious West and the etc., and demanding that he be gave a crack at the title immediately. Well, boys and girls, he got it. The minute we blowed into the nation's capital, Kid Roberts fled out to Senator Brewster's palace to pass the time of day with his common bride, the delicious Dolores. He cut his act down to 20 minutes at night, leaving the sparring out entirely, and I followed him into the dressing room to find his Jap valet laying out a dress suit and packing a bathrobe, fighting trunks and bandages into a grip. He grins at the expression which must have been on my face. "Just in time," he says. "I was going to send Kogi after you. I've got to be downtown by 10:15. See that the car's ready, will you, old man? I've promised Dolores I'd box two rounds with someone at the Red Cross benefit tonight. She's one of the patronesses, you know, and it will be rather a feather in her cap to have a world's champion there. They have a big card of theatrical stars, movie people, and a lot of prominent boxers. You know how these things are. One has to help. I want you to handle me yourself. This will be nothing, just an exhibition, and I'm afraid Dynamite Jackson and Knockout Burns might scare the ladies away." "Well, all right," I grumbled. "I guess there's no harm in helping the Red Cross, kid, but this here's kind of sudden. I don't like these short-notice affairs. Who you going to box, and?" Kid Roberts throws back his head and laughs. "Hurricane Kenny, the Chickasha Bone Crusher." He chortles. He's apparently impressed, this sporting writer who wrote that article about him, and I really believe the pair of them think they're slipping one over on me. Of course, Kenny's challenging me to smoke the thing up so that knock him dead the minute he puts up his hands. I butts in. "We'll get that baby all settled tonight." "I'm afraid I may have to stop him this time," says the kid grimly, shaking his head. "The poor fool. Well, come on." The last-minute announcement that Kid Roberts was going to step two rounds with Hurricane Kenny, the cowboy challenger for the championship, brought two-thirds of Washington out to the big auditorium where the Red Cross benefit was being had. By the time we had shouldered our way through the mob down into the basement where the men's dressing room was, Congressman was out in the street fighting with less-known millionaires for the privilege of paying $200 to stand up inside. We could plainly hear Kenny's voice in the room opposite the one we took whilst I was bandaging the kid's hands. I hadn't bothered to lock the door, and suddenly it opens and closes gently, and when I glance quickly around at the kid's startled exclamation, I see no less than Mrs. Kenny is inside. She's trembling like a shaken jelly and on the brinks of weeps. Her cute little face is the color of cream, but her eyes is feverish. The kid jumps up frowningly and throws a bathrobe around his shoulders. "Forgive me, had to come," pants Mrs. Kenny in a chalking whisper. "I Joe has sold the ranch and bet every penny we have tea in the world that he will knock you out tonight." "Oh, the infernal ass," gasps the kid. "Good heavens, what a mess. You poor girl. Who did he bet with, quick?" I says. "Maybe I can." "It's too late," moans Mrs. Kenny, collapsing into a chair and hidden her face in her hands. "I saw the man, Big Bill Henderson, they call him, who's holding the stakes. I told him everything, but it was no use. He said he would not give Joe back the money unless there wasn't any bout. There must not be a bout, do you hear?" She jumps up off the chair and faces the kid like she was willing to take him on herself. "My dear girl," says the kid, "I would do anything in the world to help you, but if I refuse to meet your husband now, I would be the laughingstock of the country. The ridicule would prevent me from—" "I don't want you to refuse to meet him," interrupts Mrs. Kenny excitedly. "That wouldn't cure him. Joe would still think he could whip you then, and he'd keep after you until you fought him. You don't know him like I do." The kid, hossing up and down the room, has been casting nervous glances at the hole. Now he stops and bends over her with a finger on his lip. "SSSH," he says in a low voice. "Mrs. Kenny,
You will have to leave my dressing room. I'll delay the bout and try to think of some way out of this muddle for you, but you must go immediately and be careful not to be seen leaving here. You have been very indiscreet in coming here at all. Your husband is dressing in a room across the corridor, and if he heard your voice found out you were in here, well, it is quite possible with his quick temper that he might misinterpret your visit. Please go at once. Mrs. Kenny caught her breath in a half-sob that said my Adam's apple bobbing around like a cock in the ocean, and the kid's drawn face showed how deeply he was moved. She looked so little and helpless standing there beside us two big stiffs that, oh damn it, you know. I turned away, but out of the corner of my eye, I see her edging slowly for the door. If Joe couldn't appear out, that bets would be off, wouldn't they? She breathes. I nodded. Then, sweet mamma, listen. The soft brown eyes turns hard and glittering. She suddenly bangs the door shut, turns the key, and lets out a ear-splitting shriek. Almost on the instant, it seemed to me, a bull's beller boomed in the hall. The door rattles, and smash, floundering, sprawling, hysterically cursing, Joe Kenny crashed through the crumbled door into the room. Like the kid, Kenny was in ring togs minus the gloves, a roll of soft bandage still dangling from one hand. For a second he peered around the dressing room like a guy walking from the dark into a brilliantly lighted hall. His little, flaming red eyes passed over me onto his chalk-faced wife, which stood silent against the wall, her face turned away from the amazed stare of the kid. I grabbed her arm and shook it, pointing frantically to Kenitrian to show her by signs to say something, explain the thing to her husband. For some reason I couldn't talk, though my lips worked enough. She hung her head and said nothing. With a roaring curse, the bone crusher grabbed me by the waist and threw me the length of the room. I fell sprawling in a corner, and then, whilst the mob waited impatiently upstairs for the world's champion and his cowboy challenger to climb through the ropes for a two-round gentlemanly sparring exhibition, they fought in the dressing room a bloodiest, most sensational battle that I, you, or anybody else ever was privileged to see, and they went at it the way Kenny always wanted it, with bare knuckles. I can close my glimpse and see the scrap now as well as if it come off last night. Boys and girls, it was sure one for the book. There was no ring, no padded mitts, no referee to prevent foul fighting, no bell to call a brief halt, no handlers to sponge off gore, close a ugly cut. No yelling crowd was pounding their seats and egging them babies. Auntie was nothing but Kenny's wife, sunk to her knees, her face buried in her arms at one end of the room, and me crouched half dazed in the other, trying to keep cool and advise my battler, which was absolutely fighting for his life. Over the busted door peered a half dozen scared faces, but if they did or said anything, nobody noticed. There was no stalling this time, no pulling wallops to let Kenny stay. Kid Roberts was putting everything he had into each punch, for the Chickasha bone crusher had turned killer, and twice had bent the kid over his giant's knee with both hands sunk in his white throat. Each time the gasping kid had wriggled free and pounded Kenny's face to a purple jelly before the bone crusher pulled his way in close to grab the champ around the body with one arm and pound his ribs with the other. A wild swing caught Roberts fair on the chin, and he crashed against the opposite wall, his head hidden with a crack that wrung a scream from me. In a flash, Kenny was on him, banging him back and forth against the wall with little, sickening and snarling grunts like a wild animal over its kill. Half cuckoo, I jumped to my feet and poured at the bone crusher's wet and straining back. "Fight fair, you big yellow bum!" I shrieked. And it was the kid, with a tooth-barring snarl that equaled Kenny's own, which shoved me away with a free arm. Kenny, having exhausted every foul means of fighting fair enough to him, I guess, according to the rules of what brawls he'd been in, decided to butt the kid, and as he lowered his head, Robert straightened him up with a terrific left and right, danced away from the wall, and broke the bone crusher's nose with a solid right smash. The ensuing gore covered them both, and I have no doubt that by this time Kenny had went clean crazy, for he grabbed at a chair and brung it down on the kid's shoulders, crashing him to the floor. Had I a gat, I would have cooked Monsieur Kenny then and there. I'd done the best I could, by shoving out a foot and tripping him as he rushed to give the prostrate kid the boots. They both got up at the same time and stood panting, fastened each other a sight for a movie director. Kenny's face was a shapeless mass from which features could only be picked by guesswork. The kid, drenched with the bone crusher's gore, looked almost as bad, and there was expression on his face I had seldom seen there when he was in a ring. Forced into this mill, Roberts had took more punishment than he ever had before in his life, and his ability to take it amazed even me. He'd been manhandled, fouled and hurt, and, shaking his blonde head, he plunged into Kenny like a lean, savage wolf against a raging bear. For a full minute now they stood toe-to-toe and slugged, and few wallops went wild, though none had the steam behind them they had at first. They'd both taken enough solid smashes to have ticked a dozen heavies. A funny look of awed wonderment began to spread over Kenny's crimson map. Slowly he began to give ground, his one good eye blinking in fear and amazement. Almost twice the size of the slender kid, he had given him everything he had, breathed his fist to the wrist in that corded steel body a dozen times, and the kid was still there, given wallop for wallop. I forgot the fight almost in watching Kenny's face, and I knew I read his thoughts correct, when without hardly knowing it, I bawled, "Now you know why he's champion, you big tramp." I could have swore Kenny nodded. Anyhow, he began to backpedal desperately, and now the kid was cool and grinning for the first time since the murder started. He feinted the bone crusher into open end and drove through his right to the jaw. The groggy Kenny swayed back and forth, both arms clumsily raised before his battered face, and setting himself, Kid Roberts banged one of Kenny's own fists against his chin with another torrid right. The man mounted, toppled forward into a perfectly timed uppercut, seemed to hang in the air an instant, and suddenly toppled over on his back, knocked stiff. Gasping, the kid stood over him, glaring down at the lifeless hulk. He actually seemed sorry it was over. "Mrs." Kenny pulls the bone crusher's head into her lap and, weeping softly, is trying to wipe off the gore with a 1-inch handkerchief. The kid bends down to her, his own voice shaking. "Mrs. Kenny," he says, "this is a terrible thing, but it had to be. There was no way. I'm glad he was whipped, but sin the remarkable Mrs. Kenny," meeting the kid's eye. "Now maybe he'll stay home with him." Yet when Roberts reaches down to sponge Kenny's face, she knocks his arm away. "Let him alone," she says fiercely, and covers the bone crusher's face with her arms. "Go away and leave him with me. You've done enough. Girls is a bit odd, hey?" Announcement is made to the mob that the kid Roberts' Hurricane Kenny bout is off on account of Kenny having hurt his arm in training, so that was that. Being terrible tough, the bone crusher is in shape to start back to dear old Chickasha with the missus in hour. By using her not, his charming wife has saved him his dough, the humiliation of getting a proper pastin' before the crowd, and likewise convinced him that ranchin' is a better game than fightin'. The deepest regret Kenny seemed to have when he come to was that the only time his wife had ever seen him fight was the Holocaust just finished, in which he runs second, and he remarks half mournfully to Roberts, "She must think I'm a hell of a fighter now." The kid shook his hand warmly and told him that he had gave him the hardest battle he'd had or ever hoped to have in his life. Then he turns to Mrs. Kenny. "And now," he says grimly, "perhaps you'll explain to your husband just why you came to my dressing room this evening and screamed." At this the bone crusher, which seemed to have forgot the cause of the muss, straightens up again and growls, his grin freezing into a scowl at the kid. "Why, of course," says Mrs. Kenny, brightly, looking straight into the kid's face and speaking to her husband. "I came down here looking for your dressing room and entered Mr. Roberts's by mistake. When I saw that I was in the wrong room, it gave me such a start that he just screamed from me fright, that was all. I would have explained at once, but you began fighting, and I had no chance." "Woof! Oh, hey, see," grins Kenny, with a sheepish look at the kid. But the kid ain't looking at him. Roberts is regarding Mrs. Kenny with open admiration. She gets a slow crimson and turns her head. Kenny looks from one to the other with a puzzled frown. "Come on," says the kid to me. "I've got to do some explaining myself. Throw my stuff in the grip, and we'll use Kenny's room to dress." He went out, and Kenny stands looking at his wife for a minute. It struck me that he seemed half pleased that she had drawed that glance from the champion, though of course the poor boob didn't know what had caused it. "He's not a bad humber," remarks the bone crusher, "and he licked me fair enough, but he ain't fooled me none with his slick talk. That fellow was stuck on ya, Bess. I could see it in his eyes when he looked at ya. Guess I'd better get ya home to the wrench, or I'll be lossin' ya, eh? All the punching I'm going to do hereafter, Bess, will be in connection with cows. Thus passed Joseph Kenny, the Chickasha bone crusher. Sometime very late that night, Kid Roberts is telling Miss Dolores Brewster in a reception room off the ballroom at the Red Cross dance that he got the bumps on his face in an auto accident and that he don't feel up to foxtrotting, but will call for her after the ball. Please let me explain, dear, why I didn't appear at the benefit, he's saying. The most sensational thing. I know all about it. Dolores butts in, smilling. Mrs. Kenny, that cowboy's wife, you know, found out I was connected with the affair and came to me this afternoon. Imagine the poor little thing coming all the way from Oklahoma. She wanted to prevent the bout, told me a most pathetic story. I'll tell you about that later, but I gave her my word I would try and stop you and her husband from entering the ring tonight. I phoned all over town and couldn't find you, and I felt horrid. I wish you could have seen her, Kane. She was so tragic. Well, I finally hit upon the scheme of sending a wire to your dressing room warning you not to enter the ring tonight, as the police were going to stop the exhibition on the ground that it was a prize fight. Wasn't I clever? That's what prevented the bout, wasn't it? Yes. I almost hollered, kicking the kid right in the ankle. The kid is still chalking when a page sticks his head in the room. Telegram for Mr. Roberts. Chants the boy. Telegram for Mr. Roberts. Colonel.
This is the end of episode 64. Thank you for listening. If you want to support the podcast, please visit storyhack.com.